Happy Thursday, Nashville. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier with you, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. That's right, we've got Dr. Crane with us today, flip-flopping with Connor. So Connor will be with Chase and Big Joe today. Nick, should be a fun show today.
It should be a fun show.
Excited
a lot of stuff to
talk
about.
Yes, we are going to talk a good amount of Titans here in this first hour. Andrew Allegretta going to join us from Vanderbilt football. From 10 a.m. to the end of the show, going to preview Vandy's football season, which gets underway in just 16 days against Charleston Southern. We'll talk about Diego Pavia, Martell Hite, Eli Stowers, the second toughest schedule in the country for Vanderbilt, and much more. Also, Anders Nelson, the head coach of Vanderbilt volleyball, will join us at 11:15 as they look to return to play for the first time in 45 years as the program is renewed, their first match coming up just around the corner. So plenty to get to on the show. But Dr. Crane, I got to start with the biggest story in all of sports, all of pop culture last night. Taylor Swift on the New Heights podcast with the Kelce brothers yesterday. They got over a million people watching it once on YouTube. Just ridiculous.
That's crazy.
I watched, my fiance convinced me to watch some of it. We watched most of the first half, and then we watched the album announcement at the very end, which was obviously the big news of the podcast for anybody who watched. One thing I was really impressed by, Taylor Swift kind of knows ball. Like, she kind of knows football a little bit. And she mentioned that she knew nothing about football because she said she asked Travis Kelce when they first met, like, how weird was it to look across the line of scrimmage in the Super Bowl and see your brother? And Travis like, that doesn't happen. We both play offense. So, but she was talking about coverages. She's like, I know the difference between cover four and cover two and cover zero and man coverage. And she goes, I was the first person to text Travis when the Chiefs drafted Xavier Worthy. So it's, I just got to say, I'm impressed. Taylor Swift seems like a very smart person, and she has fully embraced the football life since starting to date Travis Kelce.
Yeah, between her and Caitlin Clark, they both know ball, and they're both Chiefs fans. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know, something about Taylor Swift, it's, I guess, osmosis. You just pick it up when you're around somebody like that.
I guess that's true. When you're around Travis Kelce like that and living in that world for 5-6 months out of the year. I guess it's six every year because the Chiefs always go to the Super Bowl. But I got to say, I'm not a huge Travis Kelce fan. Maybe that's just because he's always such a crybaby when he faces the Titans. Like, my favorite is David Long mocking him as he's walking over to the officials, or the game where Malik Willis almost won in Arrowhead, where Kelce didn't get flagged for taking his own helmet off in the field of play, and then got a flag called on the Titans for ripping off, I think it was Trey Avery's helmet. So I'm not a huge Travis Kelce guy, but I do have to say it was more entertaining than I thought it would be.
Taylor Swift puts on a show anywhere it is.
When Tatum came downstairs yesterday and was like, we should watch this podcast, I was like, oh God, I just want to turn baseball on or something. And I got to say, it was better than I thought. Chris in Nashville says, Taylor Swift, are you guys 12-year-old girls by? Chris, over a million people watch this. I don't think all million of them were 12-year-old girls. And it was a sports story. They were on there with Travis Kelce. I'm not spending much time on this, but I thought it deserved a mention. News yesterday for the Titans. We've talked pretty much all August about how the Titans have the top waiver claim and how important that could be as you come down to roster cuts. When teams cut down to 53, the Titans are going to have first priority to go get who they want. They used that a little prematurely, going and getting Brian Asamoah, the linebacker who was cut by the Vikings last week or earlier this week, the former third-round pick in 2022 out of Oklahoma. Been a disappointment so far. When you're a top 70 pick like he was, you're expected to make an impact. He only has 30 career tackles. But I think this is how you have to use that top waiver claim, because nobody's getting cut who's going to come in and is going to immediately be a starter for you. Like, the 54th guy, even on the Eagles, who might be the deepest team in the league, isn't a top 20 player on your team. That's just not how the NFL works. But this is a guy who clearly has talent, and I believe what I saw is that he's a good special teams player. And the Titans not only need top-line talent, they need 35 through 53 to be better. And I think this is the right way to use that. Asamoah has been a disappointment, and I'm not saying I expect him to come in and be your starting inside linebacker, but he adds depth to a room that didn't have a whole lot of proven players. You cut Otis Reese, who clearly fell out of favor this year, and you add a guy with experience to Cedric Gray and James Williams. I think this is a good move for the Titans. Who knows? He may not even make the team, but I think it's worth a flyer on a guy who clearly was a talented athletic player coming out of Oklahoma and maybe can make an impact for you even if it's only on special teams.
Absolutely. And the Titans, when they had Mike Vrabel here, it was all about versatility, having guys play in different positions, if it's special teams, inside linebacker. Asamoah has that. That's the key assets he brings, like you're talking about. But also to that point, you have Asamoah, who's a, like you said, not proven, but there's two ways to look at the waiver claim. You go grab a veteran guy to help mature younger players, or you already have those guys on the roster and you go pick up younger players to help with the depth of all that, like you're saying. So I think that's the best way to look at it. There's two avenues. The Titans chose youth over age.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there may be some, I wouldn't call them cap casualties at the end of camp, but some guys who, yeah, they were good players back in the day, but it's like, you know what? We've got a younger guy who we want to see. You can go. Maybe that's a guy who makes a more immediate impact on your team. But for what you're looking for, this team, especially at inside linebacker, you need some guys who can step up and at least be competent. Because if Cody Barton gets hurt, that room is just a bunch of guys who haven't played very much. And Asamoah, even though he hasn't been, it's not like this guy has been the starting inside linebacker for the Vikings for 3 years, but he's a guy who, at the very least, you can put in there and know that this isn't the third NFL game that he's playing, like Cedric Gray or somebody like that. There was, I guess the reason he was cut, or maybe one of the reasons he was cut, I guess he got into a fight with Will Fries, the guard who came over from the Colts this year. So when you're on the roster bubble like that and you start a fight, that usually doesn't end well for you. So maybe that's something the Titans have to rein in a little bit. But I like the move. I think the Titans, they've talked about how important the top waiver claim is. And this is a guy who got cut, who has at least a little bit of a pedigree. And most of the people who get cut, like the Titans cut Ramel Keaton last week or something. Like, that's most of the guys who were getting put out there on waivers. And most of those guys you don't want on your football team because it's just all the other bad teams churning their 80 to 90 on the 90-man roster. But this is a guy who's made a 53 the last couple of years. I like the move. Even if he doesn't make the roster, it adds competition to that room. It adds depth to that room. And as we saw last year, special teams is so important. The Titans continuously gave up horrible field position because of special teams. So bring in a guy who I think I saw yesterday had a 77 PFF grade on special teams. That helps you. It does.
Yeah, and to your point about the whole fight earlier you're mentioning, I just think if you can control that, like Denard Wilson preaches that aggression. You got to have that aggressive mentality on defense. If you can control that, he's a key asset to Denard Wilson's depth on that defensive side of the ball. I think that's exactly what the Titans need, like we've talked about with depth, but especially if you can control that and turn it into turnovers, fumbles, interceptions, forced fumbles, whatever, sacks, that's it.
615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to chime in. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Again, the Titans, using their top waiver claim priority, they take Brian Asamoah off waivers from the Vikings, waiving Otis Reese. And for Otis Reese, I do feel for him because the last couple years he has battled to make this team. Another converted safety like James Williams, who's shown flashes on special teams, but you could kind of see there was something in the water when he was a DNP on Saturday in Tampa. Like, it's very rare to see a guy who has made your 53-man roster be a healthy scratch in a preseason game. So clearly something went wrong with Otis Reese. We don't know what it was, but he wasn't going to be playing impactful snaps for this team this year. You bring in a guy who might be able to, but it is just so strange because Reese seemed to be a favorite over the last couple of years. And obviously it was Vrabel's staff when he first came in here, but I wonder what went wrong there with Otis Reese, that he went from kind of a training camp darling the last couple years where it's like, man, this guy just keeps flashing and making plays, to just completely falling out of the picture and now being waived by the Titans yesterday to make room for Brian Asamoah. So we will see what Asamoah is able to do as he joins the team. Titans off today. They have their second preseason game tomorrow against the Falcons. Looks like the starters are going to play a couple of drives again against Atlanta. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'd love to hear from you. This September, Tim McGraw will be performing at Trinitix's Rock the Cradle in Nashville, a meaningful event supporting newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org. Again, fun show coming up. We've got Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier behind the glass. Coming up at 10 a.m., Andrew Allegretta, the voice of Vanderbilt football, will join us for the rest of the show. He's been out at Vandy practice. He'll give us takeaways from what he's seen so far from the Commodores as they look to build off of a 7-6 season last year. Also, Vanderbilt volleyball head coach Anders Nelson will join at 11:15, previewing their first season in 45 years as they return to action. They've got a fun schedule plan, too. They're playing a game at Bridgestone. They're playing an outdoor game on Wyatt Lawn at on Vanderbilt's campus. And a lot of their games will be in Memorial Gym. So excited to talk to Anders Nelson. Again, that is at 11:15. We are off and running on this Thursday. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds take on the Durham Bulls. First pitch is at 5:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Andrew Allegretta going to join us at 10 a.m. to talk some Vanderbilt football as the Commodores are just over 2 weeks from starting their season at home against Charleston Southern. Quickly before we get back to the Titans, I just saw this. I know it came out about 30 minutes ago. Nicole Auerbach and Pete Thamel reporting the NCAA has notified those tied to the Michigan NCAA sign-stealing infractions case that an announcement on the findings and punishments will be publicly released on Friday, so tomorrow. Again, Pete Thamel from ESPN, Nicole Auerbach from NBC reporting that. Can I say, I don't really understand exactly what they're going to say. Like, Connor Stallions did a documentary about this already.
Like, it's all out.
Right. Like, this, the Untold documentary, maybe prematurely, came out like a year ago at this point. But maybe to go tinfoil hat here, maybe this is where the Vols fans finally find out whether their conspiracy theories are correct. Because I know there are Vols fans out there who truly believe that Michigan gave South Carolina Tennessee's signals for that game where Hendon Hooker got hurt. They gave up 60-something points to Spencer Rattler, and it ruined their playoff chances. I still think it's a conspiracy theory. I don't think it actually happened. But the fact that they're announcing this and saying they're going to announce their findings, I don't know. Maybe there's something to it, because I just – I don't – what more is there to say? Like, Connor Stallions, he did advanced scouting, and – the Michigan already, Sherrone Moore self-suspended for two specific games during the season or whatever it is. But I just don't know what else there is to say, unless maybe there is a wider spread problem of Michigan, like, telling opponents of other teams what's coming. I have no idea.
Maybe stripping them of any accolades, like personal accolades for players, like with any form of trophies at the end of the year or something like that. I don't know. I mean, it's... Again, I don't know what else you can grab from that.
Right. Like, the Central Michigan part of it, of Connor Stallions being on the sideline, that I think falls under some sort of, you know, he crossed a line. But I'm wondering, and maybe this has come out, like, what rule was Connor Stallions breaking by buying tickets to other games and just watching the sideline? Like, anybody can do that. Like, I understand maybe it's an unwritten rule. I never really understood why Connor Stallions, like, I felt like it was just trying to gain some sort of competitive advantage. And you can go watch it, and if you can figure it out, it's like in baseball. Like, what the Astros were doing was cheating, because they were using, they were electronically stealing signs and letting people know. But I played high school baseball. one of my head coach my junior year, he figured out what the signs were, and he instead of like banging a trash can, he told us, "Hey, if I say your last name, it's a fastball. If I say your number, it's a breaking ball." So like that, I think, is within the law. While using like an electronic means, like the Astros did, that is against the rules. So I'm just wondering what exactly Connor Stallions did that could lead to infractions. I feel like it's just going to be some sort of slap on the wrist to Michigan.
Yeah, and in that documentary, he specifically said like other people were buying the tickets for him, and he was being propped up at the 50-yard line. So maybe that's where they can get him.
Yeah,
at the
okay,
gray area.
I get what you're saying. Is like if Michigan was funding it, then maybe that's an issue. I was thinking that the way Stallions talked about it in the documentary, and maybe he was just trying to, you know, cover for Michigan.
Yeah, save a little face.
Be the fall guy. But it sounded like he was just addicted to trying to help Michigan win at all costs, so he was doing this all by himself. I guess that's true. If Harbaugh was directing him to do it, then I think maybe there's more there.
Because it delved into him having a photographic memory, memorizing certain hand signals. I'm like, dude, this is more complex than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's... As someone who, again, playing high school baseball, there was one year I didn't play much, and I made it my job to, like, see if I could steal their signs, and I never figured it out. Never. Like, every time I thought I had a beat on it, I was like, all right, he's putting the four down there, and that was the changeup. It's like, all right, never mind. I can't figure it out. So, I don't know. I think he was just a smart guy, and we'll see what the NCAA is actually going to come out with. Michigan has tried to self-punish as much as they possibly can, but I don't know. The NCAA, they kind of lost me on their ability to punish after the whole North Carolina thing. Like that, the North Carolina did not have their athletes going to classes. They had fake degrees, and the NCAA basically said that since those classes were open to other students than athletes, they couldn't do anything. Like, they lost me on that one. UNC should have gotten the death penalty for that.
And also for Michigan's standpoint and NCAA, I mean, NCAA is obsolete. So I see why they're trying to capitalize on all of this.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just trying to get as much money as possible with all this new, air quote, salary cap that's now being implemented into college sports.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what comes out of this, because the NCAA, I mean, when's the last time the NCAA actually meaningfully punished anybody? Like, they punished Tennessee a little bit for the whole Jeremy Pruitt thing, but it was more... They pretty much just give out slaps on the wrist, and I think they kind of know that their authority's mostly gone, and I really don't expect much to come of this. But who knows? Again, putting the tinfoil hat on, maybe it could be bigger than everybody thinks, and maybe Michigan was trying to influence other games, because, of course, that crosses the line. Like, sending advanced scouting reports to other teams to make sure Tennessee or Clemson loses to help your playoff hopes, that is definitely something that would deserve NCAA violations. I don't believe it. I've said from the jump that I think it's a conspiracy theory, but who knows? Maybe I'll be proven wrong tomorrow when these findings come out.
I don't know. You mentioned about all the self, you know, taking yourself out of things, like for Michigan, Connor Stallions and all that. They're taking themselves out doing that self, I guess, discipline, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Moore. That just leads to more red flags for me. There is something deeper.
Right.
Because there's so much of it. Like, you talked, there was like two selected games. Like, he was like, oh, I'm going to suck this game and this game. I'll be suspended from.
Yeah.
That just leads me to think there's something else.
It was like, did he suspend himself for weeks 3 and 4 or something like that? Because he didn't want to miss the Oklahoma game in week 2. And then you get full on into conference play after that. I think he is missing one conference game. And you know what? The one part of this that also just makes you think a little bit more, and this isn't a novel thought, but Harbaugh leaving for the NFL, maybe he knew something was coming. I don't know. I'm excited to read this because I just don't 100% understand what the violations are going to be and how big the punishments are going to be. Because this is something like we really haven't seen before, and it is kind of in a gray area of everybody advanced scouts, but how far are you able to go and who's able to be involved in it? But you're right. Something does, it stinks a little bit with Michigan self-imposing these punishments and Harbaugh winning a national championship and just jumping ship and saying, you know what? I fulfilled what I said I was going to do, and I went and got a national championship for my alma mater, and I'm getting the heck out of here before these punishments come down. So again, Pete Thamel from ESPN reporting that the NCAA is going to release their findings and their sanctions on Michigan for the sign-stealing scandal that's been going on for years now. Again, I don't know, like, somehow before the NCAA finished their investigation, a full documentary on Connor Stallions has already come out. So we will find out more about that tomorrow. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts on the Michigan scandal, if you're a Vols fan out there hoping that your conspiracies are confirmed tomorrow, let us know. 615-737-1025. I did have a thought on the Titans. Everybody's making a whole lot about Cam Ward and his comments yesterday. And Cam Ward saying he has a top five wide receiver core in the NFL. That's just disingenuous. It's not true. It's the same thing. That is the same thing as him saying Treylon Burks is a top five receiver and Tajay Spears is a top five running back. Like, he's just trying to hype up his guys. But he did say he thinks the Titans can have a top 10 offense. Not likely. But I wanted to look and see what last year, what was the 10th best offense and what would that look like if the Titans were able to do that? How many sacks would they give up? How many yards would Cam Ward throw for? What would it take to be a top 10 offense, however unlikely it may be? We'll talk about that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, next man up, 1025 The Game.
Now that you've had these three joint practices, just how do you feel like this offense stacks up against pro defenses? You've seen it live. How do you feel the sex up?
Well, I think we honestly have the ability to be a top 10 offense. But also going, it goes on every guy in that huddle, including myself, bringing the right mindset every day. And us also playing together. I think that's the biggest thing, is that we always play together. We never point fingers at each other on both sides of the ball. And we just got to always have that mindset that we can be the best offense in the NFL. And then it really just comes with just us caring about each other on the field, off the field, and I think a lot of that stuff will translate to the game.
That was Cam Ward after yesterday's joint practice saying he thinks the Titans could have a top 10 offense in the NFL this year. I doubt it, but the season hasn't been played yet, so we have no idea what's going to happen. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, next man up, 1025 The Game. Andrew Allegretta from Vanderbilt Football going to join us at 10 a.m. for the rest of the show. We'll preview the Commodores' upcoming season. But I had a thought on this. You know, it is very, very, very unlikely the Titans are going to have a top 10 offense this year, just considering who they have on the roster and a rookie quarterback. But I wanted to look and see what a top 10 offense last year looked like and what the differences could be for the Titans to be able to achieve that. And funny enough, Nick Frazier, I don't know if you've looked at the grid. Do you know who the 10th best offense in the NFL was last year?
I gave it a little gander. The Broncos?
It was the Denver Broncos with a rookie quarterback in Bo Nix. So the Broncos averaged 25 points per game last year. The Titans averaged 18.7. And that was good enough for 27th in the league. And I'm doing this on points per game because, as we know from the Titans' defensive stats last year, yards per game can be a little bit misleading when it comes to how good you actually are. So I looked at the differences between these two teams. And it's funny because when you look at the averages, it's not that different. Last year, Bo Nix averaged 6.7 yards per attempt. The Titans, between Levis and Rudolph, actually averaged 6.8 yards per attempt. Rushing, both teams averaged 4.1 yards per attempt. Each team had 1,000-yard receiver. Cortland Sutton had 1,081 for the Broncos. Calvin Ridley had 1,017. They had a couple of guys in the 400 to 500 range. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, Chigakonkwo for the Titans, Marvin Mims, Devon Vele for the Broncos. So when you look at just the raw counting stats and the averages, it looks about the same. Yardage-wise, it's not that much different. The Broncos passed for about 180 more yards last season than the Titans did. They ran for 50 yards more than the Titans did. The difference is what me and Corey Curtis talked about yesterday the catastrophic plays from your quarterback. That is really the only difference. And it was funny to look at because you look at the stats and they're almost identical, except last year, Titans quarterbacks were sacked 52 times. Bo Nix was sacked 24 times. So half as many sacks, less than half as many sacks for the Broncos. And turnovers, the Broncos turned the ball over 19 times last year. The Titans turned it over 34 times. So almost twice as many turnovers. So, you know, when you look at a top 10 offense, it's not likely the Titans end up being a top 10 offense, but it is just funny to look and see, really, if you just limit the turnovers, limit the sacks, it puts you in that range, just like the Broncos last year, even with a rookie quarterback.
Isn't that funny how you can have a decent offensive line and you can actually be productive? I mean, that's all the Titans have to have. And luckily this preseason, they haven't heard anything of the offensive line. It's been decent.
It's crazy. And I was scrolling through it, and I'm like, I can't believe that. It looks almost identical. Yards per attempt, yards per rush. There was no, like, elite receiver on either team. Tony Pollard was the best running back between those two teams. The Broncos didn't have any running back with more than 600 yards last year. But the turnovers and the sacks, that's the big difference. And that's all it was last year that separated the Titans from being a team that scores 19 points per game and a team that scores 25 points per game, is they gave it away almost twice the rate of the Broncos, and they got sacked at almost or over twice the rate of the Broncos. You look at, like, third down percentage, the Titans were 37%, 38% converting third downs and 53% in the red zone. The Broncos were a little bit better. That could be another reason, is that when in crunch time, when you needed to get a first down, they were a little bit better there. Down in the red zone, they were a little bit better there. And of course, you know, in terms of record, the Broncos defense was way better than the Titans defense was. But it is turnovers and sacks. Corey Curtis was talking about it yesterday, about the catastrophic drop back percentage. Catastrophic drop back percentage. That Bo Nix in college had a 2% catastrophic dropback percentage, where 2% of his dropbacks he got sacked or threw an interception. 1 out of 50. Last year, it was about 1 out of 8 for the Titans. No, more than that. I think it was like 15%. So if you just bring that down, this team could be better. I still don't think they're close to a top 10 offense, but if you cut the turnovers from 34 into, let's say, the low 20s, you throw 12 picks, lose 10 fumbles throughout the year. Still not great, but better. And you get sacked 35 times, twice a game, instead of 3 times per game. That could add 3 or 4 points to your average just from not giving the ball away and avoiding those drive-killing sacks that put you behind the chains. I'm not saying we know Cam Ward can do this, but it is a good sign that you hope a better quarterback and a better offensive line to limit some of those big mistakes that we saw last year.
Yeah, and when you mentioned turnovers and you know, sacks, for me, listening to Cam Ward say that, if I take him literally on that, it's more on him than it is the offensive line.
Yep.
Because as of right now in the preseason, he's the one turning the ball over. It's
right.
Interception after interception, and hopefully he's learning from those. But I believe Cody Barton spoke with him after one of the practices. I think it was PK talking about this, that he was giving him a tell. And he's like, hey, what am I doing wrong so I can fix this? If he can fix that, again, I think you would see huge improvements.
Right. Cam Ward has turned the ball over too much in practice so far. So that is a concern. But it is, you like to hear what he said yesterday of, you know, when he left that ball in bounds and threw the pick, pain. That's all he felt was pain. And he's like, I just got to learn not to do that. And he said, throw it through the opposing coach's head. So I think Cam needs to he needs to pretend that there is a scrum going on the sideline and just fire the ball into it when he needs to throw the ball away. Chip from Mount Juliet on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says the Titans need to stop setting the high expectations this early, especially after the horrid season last year. It's not the Titans. It's just Cam Ward. Like, everybody else seems to be tempering expectations for what this team's going to be. Like, Cam Ward, I like it. You gotta put confidence into your team. If you go up to the podium and say, yeah, we might be average this year, maybe a little below average, that doesn't, you know, people aren't going to follow you if you say that. If you believe in your team, they're going to believe in you. So I have no problem with him saying it, but we have to go through it and actually look and say, okay, that's probably not going to happen.
Mid.
Dustin from Hopkinsville said, Ward already showed me he's going to fit right in on the blowing sunshine. True Titan right there, just like the org. Cam Ward, I don't think he's doing it to blow sunshine. I think he's doing it because he's confident. Like, it's the same thing as saying Brian Callahan is the best coach in the NFL. Like, it's not true. Factually, it's not true. But you have to have confidence in your guys, and you have to outwardly show confidence towards your guys because that's your job as a leader. Dustin also says they have Sean Payton in Denver. Plug Levis in under Payton and on the Broncos offense. I bet Levis is still on this team and looking promising. I don't know about that. Like, Bo Nix and Will Levis could not be more polar opposites in terms of quarterback play. Let's go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam in Portland wants to talk about Cam Ward. Adam, good morning. What you got?
What's up, Jake, man? Hey, I think you're hitting on it pretty good, is that we don't really know what this offense is, especially last year. The offense couldn't run properly ever because the line was so atrocious. So I don't know. I'm not defending Will Levis. I think even if he had clean pockets, you can't take those decisions out of that dude's head. Like, especially doing it 2 weeks in a row. Doing it the first time, I'm like, okay. Doing it 2 weeks in a row, I'm like, get him out of here. Like, I was over week two against the Jets. It was over. But the problem that we have, even if Cam has this, we could be top 10, which I'm not saying he can't. This is the NFL. They're all pros. I watched that defense the other day get the one sack that they got, and then that Tampa was easily able to get a first down after that. I think our defense is going to be so bad. And you don't just take L'Jarius Sneed a year, over a year, whatever, removed from playing football and plug him in and he'd be fixed. He wasn't good whenever he was healthy and on the team. He wasn't doing anything. So imagine him sitting for a year. I can't see how our defense is going to be great. And so Cam, yeah, you could have a good top 10. I mean, you might, but you still might be like a 4-win team with a top 10 offense because you're going to have to score 48 points a game to be able to keep up with these guys. So that's what I worry about. If you look back on it, Jake, I don't know if you guys remember like the early Titans, but the Javon Curse and Kenny Holmes even, and then we got Kevin Carter, and then even you go up to like 2008, it was Vanden Bosch and Albert Haynesworth. We always had a good pass rush when our teams are good. I don't know who could get three sacks on this team. So I really worry about that defense.
Yeah, Adam, I agree with you. I think the Titans defense is going to be pretty bad this year. Like, there's just not a whole lot of hope for me. You would need so much to go right for that defense to be good. The offense, there's so many question marks. And like Adam said, you just have no idea. I don't think they're going to be a top 10 offense. I don't even think they're going to be a top half of the league offense. I'd probably put them low 20s. I think there will be improvement. They were 27th last year in points per game. I would say there will be an improvement, but a marginal improvement. But if you had asked anybody at this time last year, will the Broncos be a top 10 offense in scoring? Everyone would have said no. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying, like, Cam Ward says that it's not the craziest thing in the world to believe that they could take a big jump. I don't know if it's that big of a jump, but you look at the Broncos, the biggest difference between the Titans and Broncos last year was they didn't hurt themselves. They had a better offensive line and they had a quarterback who didn't make stupid mistakes. If the Titans can do that, it's going to make them better. Let's go to Trey on our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Trey, good morning. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing great.
Hey, as far as what y'all have been playing, as far as the pressures on Cam Ward, I think that he believes that they can be good. But from what I've seen, the glimpses of what I've seen of Cam Ward, it looks good, but it needs a little work. It needs a lot of work, you know. We don't have any 100 yards receivers that give us 100 yards per game. And I don't think we can match points right now. I don't believe we can match points with the bottom half of the league. And until we can produce points and put points on the board, as far as the fans go that I know, we're out on Cam Ward right now. You know, putting him in for two series, that's not showing the fans that okay, we're with this guy, you know, putting him in, you know, is this really weird right now, the vibe with the Titans. And y'all have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Trey. No one should be all the way in. No one should be all the way out on Cam Ward after one preseason game. Like, he's going to get better. There's going to be development. And if there's not, Brian Callahan's going to be the one who gets blamed for that. Like, you've got minimum 20 games of Cam Ward as the starting quarterback in the regular season for this team before you have any idea what you have. Maybe you start to see the growth before that. Maybe you start to see him not be very good before that. But everybody just hit the brakes a little bit. He's played two series in a preseason game. Like, let's get to mid-October before we start saying I'm out on Cam Ward. Please. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have thoughts on the Titans. Again, Andrew Allegretta going to join us in about 15 minutes to talk some Vanderbilt football for the rest of the show. Jake Lyman, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier here on Next Man Up, 1025 The Game. Wrapping up the first hour here on Next Man Up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier with you. Andrew Allegretta from Vanderbilt football will join us coming up at 10 for the rest of the show, previewing Vandy's 2025 season, again, just over 2 weeks away. Also, Anders Nelson, head coach of Vanderbilt Volleyball, will join us at 11:15 as they prepare to return to play for the first time in nearly a half century. Quickly, before we go back to the text line, Adam Schefter tweeting, ESPN sources, Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice is expected to have his disciplinary hearing with the NFL on Tuesday, September 30th in New York. So Rice is now likely to be able to play the first 4 weeks of the season before any potential discipline is imposed. So Rashee Rice likely going to be able to play the first four games, which is big for the Chiefs because their first four games are against the Chargers, Eagles, the Giants, and the Ravens. So they will have Rice for those four games, three of which are against possible Super Bowl contenders. Like, I don't know if I put the Chargers fully in there, but
I'd say they're halfway. And they're on the fence.
You got the Chargers in Brazil, and then Eagles Super Bowl rematch, and then, of course, the Ravens, who are always in the thick of things in the AFC. So Rashee Rice will be able to play in those first four games before his disciplinary hearing with the NFL. We were just having a conversation about Cam Ward saying the Titans could have a top 10 offense in the NFL this season. And, you know, it's unlikely. Unlikely. But we look back, and the 10th best offense in the NFL was the Denver Broncos with a rookie quarterback. And the big difference was just that they didn't throw interceptions and they didn't get sacked. Like, that is pretty much the only difference between the Titans being the 27th best offense and a top 15 offense in the NFL. Nevada Josh on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, all I know is if the Titans suck this year and the Browns make it to the playoffs with Sanders, I'm going to start a million-man march to Amy's house. Like, Shador Sanders and Cam Ward, just separate them in your mind. I understand the comparisons are going to happen, but what Shador Sanders does has nothing to do with what Cam Ward does. And I'm rooting for Shador Sanders. Like, I think he's a good guy. He deserves an opportunity to go out there and prove whether he can be a franchise quarterback. But I'm very disappointed that he's not playing this weekend, because it just leaves another week for people to say stuff like this, where if Cam goes out and throws a pick tomorrow night in Atlanta, the texts of they drafted the wrong quarterback, should have taken Shador, are going to continue, because the only thing people have seen from Shador Sanders in the NFL was him throwing two touchdowns against third stringers last week against Carolina.
And for the people that say otherwise about Shador Sanders, he now has more film on himself than anybody else does as a rookie quarterback. Guy right. Played a full game.
Played three quarters.
Yeah, essentially a full game, but, well, for rookies.
Because everybody in that Cleveland room is hurt right now. And you got Joe Flacco, who's healthy, but he's 45 years old or whatever, so they're not going to throw him out there in a preseason game. But Kenny Pickett hurt his shoulder, hamstring for Dylan Gabriel, and now an oblique injury for Shador Sanders. So, I mean, and obviously Deshaun Watson's not playing. So it's going to be all Tyler Huntley, I think, for their next preseason game. Shador Sanders, first of all, is not going to be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, at least to start the year. there will come a point where they get to 1-5 or whatever it is, and they say, you know what, we might as well see what we got in Shador this year before we go take Arch Manning, Garrett Nussmeier, Drew Aller, insert quarterback here in next year's draft. So we're going to see Shador Sanders start football games, likely going to see Shador Sanders start against the Titans late in the season. And we will probably see Ward versus Sanders head-to-head. But I'm just asking Titans fans out there, separate them in your head, because it was not a decision. There was no decision between Cam Ward and Shador Sanders. One of them went first overall and had teams trying to trade up for him for the first overall pick. The other one went in the fifth round behind guys like Dylan Gabriel and Jalen Milroe and Tyler Shuck. Like, it wasn't a decision, so separate them. What Sanders does has nothing to do with what Cam Ward does.
You just got to get that out of your head. You're right. I mean, to think that people are trying to, you know, compare apples to apples, you can't. There's just two different sample sizes. I'm looking at it from a preseason perspective. Cam Ward only had two series.
Right. And I mentioned on Monday, because I knew people were going to say this, that Cam Ward in his two series, 5 for 8, 67 yards, led a touchdown drive. Shador Sanders, his first two series, was 3 for 7 with 30 yards, punted, and had a turnover on downs. Like, if Shador Sanders had played just two series, we're having a completely different conversation. I just, you know, I've had this rant twice now this week. Separate them. Sanders and Ward, their paths do not need to intertwine. It's not like Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston, who are picked back-to-back, and you're always going to be comparing them, because the Bucs could have taken Marcus Mariota, and the Titans would have had to take Jameis Winston at that point. Like, they were intertwined. The Browns passed on Shador Sanders like 8 times before they finally picked him. Like, this, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
Can we just, I guess, say thanks Mel Kiper for all this?
Right.
Because he's the one that kind of ran this up for the most part.
For sure. I mean, having Mel Kiper talk about Shador Sanders while Cam Ward is walking up to shake Roger Goodell's hand, like, it's ridiculous. Dustin from Hopkinsville. How do you know the teams trying to trade up didn't want Sanders? Because they had like 7 chances to take him and they didn't. Like, if they were going to trade up to the number one pick to take him, like the Giants, they wanted to trade up to the number one pick. They then traded up again to take Jackson Dart over Shador Sanders. Like, it's ridiculous. Shador Sanders, I think he's going to be a fine NFL quarterback, likely a backup, but he was not worthy of the first overall pick. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. That wraps up my rant for the day. Andrew Allegretta from Vanderbilt Football going to join us for the rest of the show. He's been out there at practice. He'll have some thoughts on the Commodores as they look to build off of a 7-win season, including a bowl win in the Birmingham Bowl over Georgia Tech. Also, we'll have Vanderbilt volleyball head coach Anders Nelson coming up at 11:15. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, next man up here on 102.5 The Game.